2 Chronicles chapter 7. This is about the dedication of the temple. But let's remember that God had stated very clearly to David when he first had this idea of a temple that I don't want a temple. I don't do that. I'm quite happy living in a humble tent. I don't want a temple made of bricks and mortar. But both David and Solomon pushed this idea ahead, and so it was rather like Israel wanting a human king. God said, you're rejecting me. That's what you want, but okay, that's what they wanted. And he says, I gave you a king in my anger and took him away in my wrath, Hosea says. So God gave them a king and worked through that system. And it's the same with the temple. He didn't want this temple, but okay, they insisted to do it. So okay, his glory comes down, dwells there. The fire from heaven comes down miraculously, consumes all these offerings. But I think it shows how God thirsts for relationship with us. And even if the way we wish to go is not completely ideal, okay, he will go along with us. And it's rather like the parable about the man with the one talent who hid it in the earth, didn't do anything with it, and the Lord will say to him at the last day, you should have lent this out, and you should have at least got interest for me. Well, that would have been against the law if he had lent that to his Jewish brethren, because they weren't supposed to lend for interest. It's as if the Lord is saying, look, you should have done at least something, even if it wasn't ideal. And so I think all this puts paid to the idea of perfectionism, that God has one standard, one level, and if you don't happen to make it, well, that's it, no deal. He is more proactive than that. He is reaching out right across human weakness. What he wants us to do is to respond to him. I'm not saying that therefore it doesn't matter. He should be content with whatever he gets out of us. Not at all. If you love God, quite simply love God, you won't reason like that at all. And yet we have to notice that the building of the temple and the building of Solomon's own personal house, verse 11, is described as all that came into Solomon's heart. Solomon finished the house of Yahweh and the king's house. He completed all that came into Solomon's heart. It was his own idea. That's what I think. And I think that the claim that God actually gave the dimensions of the temple to David is very much reported speech. In fact, the record in Chronicles, in 1 Chronicles, says that these were the plans which David said, Yahweh made known to me. It's all reported speech. This is what David claimed. But here we're told this was what Solomon wanted to do, and the building of God's house is paralleled with the building of the king's house, which was obviously just for himself. And he spends, I think it's something like 7 years building the temple for God and 13 years building his own house. And in Ecclesiastes 2, he admits that I went through a phase of building. I was very into building. I loved architecture, design, big building projects. This was all that came into his heart. It was what he willed to do, 1 Kings 9 verse 1 says. So I think that this is an example of somebody really just getting an obsession with a project rather than wanting to actually serve God. The huge number of sacrifices was quite unnecessary, and not only unnecessary and extremely gory, I mean, tens of thousands of animals being killed. I mean, the amount of blood would have been absolutely horrific. It would have been a massacre. It would have been absolutely a bloodletting. But David had stated earlier regarding his sin with Bathsheba, who of course was Solomon's mother, that God doesn't want sacrifice. He wants humble and broken hearts. And yet Solomon obviously is not paying attention to that. He is just focused on the external, on the religious. And he has said in his prayer when he dedicates the temple, Solomon says to Israel, look, if you sin, what you got to do is to look towards this house and pray towards this house, this temple, and you shall be forgiven. But I think God corrects that here in verse 13 and 14, where he says, If I shut up the sky so that there is no rain, goes on, or the curses for breaking the covenant in Deuteronomy 28, if my people shall humble themselves and pray, then will I hear from heaven. What Solomon had said is, if they sin, well, they need to pray towards this house. But I think we need to give due weight to the fact that God amends that when he sort of talks back to Solomon here, and he says, well, what they have to do is humble themselves and pray. Absolutely a pointed omission of pray towards this house. The physical temple, just like all external forms of religion, was not to be the basis for atonement and reconciliation. And here, yet again, you have the two poles, the religion on the one hand, the big physical temple praying towards it to get forgiven, and the spiritual on the other, which is if you sin, well, humble yourself, and humility is so critical to God, and pray, period, and pray, not pray towards this house. And in fact, I think one reason why, as we read on in this chapter, God actually destroyed the temple was because he knew that it was becoming a sort of a fetishism. That was replacing humble hearts and direct prayer to him. In Jeremiah, even on the eve of the Babylonian destruction, they're saying, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. They loved their temple, but they were very far from God. They were worshipping idols within the temple. So we are all caught up to some degree in that tension between the religious, the feeling that I can only sort of be with God if I am in the church, if I am at the meeting, and the truly spiritual, and what God is essentially looking for, which is the guy kneeling down by his sofa when the kids are all in bed, and with a humble heart, repenting of his sins of that day, and praying directly to God. That is the essence. That is the essence that God is looking for. The religious, the structures are, well, I suppose to some degree necessary. But the problem is that they lead us to a position whereby form so easily eclipses content, and the religious eclipses the spiritual.